The Lord be with you.
And with your
spirit. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Now a man was ill, Lazarus, from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who had anointed the Lord with perfumed oil and dried his feet with her hair. It was her brother Lazarus who was ill. So the sister sent word to Jesus, saying, "Master, the one you love is ill." When Jesus heard this, he said, "This illness is not to end in death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of Man may be glorified through it."
Take the stone away.
Take the stone away.
Take the stone away.
Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was ill, he remained for 2 days in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just trying to stone you, and you want to go back there?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in a day? If one walks during the day, he does not stumble, but he sees the light of this world. But if one walks at night, he stumbles, because the light is not in him."
"Lazarus is asleep, and I am going to awaken him." So his disciples said to him, "Master, if he is asleep, he will be saved." But Jesus was not talking about death. He was talking about death, while they thought he meant ordinary sleep. So then Jesus said to them clearly, "Lazarus has died, and I am glad for you that I was not there, that you may believe. Let us go to him." So Thomas, called Didymus, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us go also to die with him."
Take the stone away. Take the stone away. Take the stone away. Take the stone away.
When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, only 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary sat at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give to you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise." Martha said to him, "I know he will rise in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus told her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, even if he dies, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I have come to believe that you are Christ, the Son of God, the one who is coming into the world."
Take the stone away. Take the stone away.
Take the stone away. Take the stone away.
And when she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary secretly, saying, "The teacher is here and is asking for you." As soon as she heard this, she rose quickly and went to him. For Jesus had not yet come into the village. He was still where Martha had met him. So when the Jews who were with her in the house comforting her saw Mary get up quickly and go out, they followed her, presuming that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died."
Take the stone away.
Take the stone away.
Take the stone away. Take the stone away.
When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her weeping, he became perturbed and deeply troubled and said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Sir, come and see." And Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not the one who opened the eyes of the blind man have done something so this man would not have died?" So Jesus, perturbed again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and it had a stone lay across it.
Take the stone away.
Take the stone away. Take the stone away. Take the stone away.
And Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the dead man's sister, said to him, "Lord, by now there will be a stench. He has been dead for 4 days." But Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" And so they took away the stone. And Jesus raised his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you for hearing me. I know that you always hear me, but because of the crowd here, I have said this, that they may believe that you sent me." And when he had said this, he cried out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out."
Take the stone away.
The dead man came out, tied hand and foot with burial bands, and his face wrapped in a cloth. So Jesus said to them, "Untie him and let him go." Now many of the Jews who had come to Mary and seen what he had done began to believe in him.
The Gospel of the Lord. This great event, recorded in the Gospel of John, is found only, curiously enough, only in John. It's the greatest miracle of Jesus' public life, and yet only John records it. It is the seventh sign, we've talked about this in the past, that in John's Gospel he does not speak about miracles. He speaks about signs. For the miracle itself, the great event, the wonder work, is meant to point to something deeper, more profound, a greater teaching. And therefore, we should not just pause over the literal interpretation of the event. In the Gospel of John, the seven signs begin at Cana in Galilee, you'll remember that, and they conclude here with the book of signs finishes here in chapter 11. One or two things, exegetical things about this. One is, it's the only parable, or it's the only miracle in all four Gospels where somebody is named. Second thing that's interesting about this is, who is the beloved disciple? In the Gospel of John, for a long time, scholars seem to believe that John himself was the beloved disciple, and therefore it was a kind of a personal reference to him in the shaping of his gospel, with the various references to the beloved disciple. There's a minority of scholars believe that Lazarus may indeed have been the beloved disciple, since he is never named in the gospel. And they say this because when the word is sent to Jesus, the word is, "The one you love is ill." And then when Jesus comes to the tomb, before he calls Lazarus forth, he weeps at the tomb, and they say, "See how he loved him." For this reason, some scholars, but a minority, think that possibly the reference to the beloved disciple may be about Lazarus. Let me look at the event itself. There are various components in this event. It's somewhat complex, but I look at the notion of the tomb. The tomb, the sign of the tomb, it's a place of aloneness. It's a place of darkness. It's a place of emptiness. It's a place of death. And it's also a place of decomposition, where somehow the person in the tomb is going through a decomposition. The Jews believed at the time, there was a rabbinic belief, that the soul would hover around the tomb for 3 days. And after 3 days, the body, the face of the one who had died, was so disfigured by decomposition that the soul would no longer recognize the person who had died, and therefore the soul would leave. Therefore, it's an important reference here that he was dead for 4 days. And therefore, the soul was gone. So Lazarus wasn't just dead. Lazarus was very dead. I mean, the soul was gone. Now, that's kind of interesting, because some of the elders among us will remember the times when we would anoint a dead body. We had this notion that even after a person was clinically dead, because the fingernails would grow and the beard would grow and the facial hair would grow, we thought the body still had the soul in it. When I was first ordained, I was a chaplain to the county coroner, which is the county morgue, and I'd get a call at night and they found some little person down on Skid Row who was wearing a St. Christopher medal or a cross, and they'd call me and I'd rush down to the morgue and anoint the body, because we had this notion, followed from the Semitic belief, that the soul was still in the body even though the person was clinically dead. The soul remained for a period of time. That's why the reference to the 4 days here is rather important. It might seem very kind of hidden, but it's very important to understand the power and the extraordinary nature of this miraculous event in the Gospel of John. So what does this mean to us? Well, 1 week ago, just today, I was in Jerusalem with 50 pilgrims, and we had a mass on Sunday last week at Gethsemane. It's a beautiful basilica by this famous Barluzzi, this extraordinary architect, and it's very dark, very reflective, and it's meant to give you this feeling of the darkness of the Garden of Gethsemane, the aloneness, the sense of abandonment, the fear of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, where the Gospels tell us the angel was sent to strengthen him, and how he prayed that this chalice would pass by, but only God's will for him, only the will of the Father. And then the next morning, on Monday morning of this week, we had a mass at the tomb at 6 o'clock in the morning. The tomb, the place of burial, but also the place of life, the place of resurrection. Our pilgrims had a mass there at 6 a.m. on Monday morning. Now, what does this mean to us? The first thing that's important to notice about this is that you can only hear the call to life from a place of darkness. In every pilgrimage that I have accompanied over there to Jerusalem, we always pick a song. We pick a song that it will become our song. And we sing it every morning on the bus, and we sing it at Mass. And by the time we get a few days into the pilgrimage, everybody knows the song. They begin by saying, But by the time we're into it, after a few days, everybody knows the song, and they love the song. And the song for this pilgrim was, Jerusalem, my destiny. I have set my eyes on the hills, and Jerusalem is my place of destiny. Now that's a biblical thought, because Jerusalem is the symbol of everybody's destiny in the spiritual journey. And therefore, Jerusalem is not just the place of life, it's the place of death. It's the place of darkness and the place of light. The place of death and the place of resurrection. And it happens to every one of us. And someday, when we're in darkness, and life is empty, and we're impoverished, and we're lost, and we're in doubt, and we're questioning things, we're uncertain where we're going, that's when we hear the voice of Jesus saying, come forth from the tomb, from the place of emptiness, and the place of poverty, and the place of darkness. Come and claim the new life that I will give you. For someday, you will question yourself in your life. Someday, you will hear the voices saying, prove yourself. Earn the respect that you deserve. Show yourself that you are successful. Make me proud of you. And when all this doesn't happen, sometimes we fall into a place of darkness, a place of doubt. We wonder if we're good enough. We wonder if you're beautiful enough, if we're sufficient enough. We wonder even if we're lovable enough. And this is the tomb. It's a place of darkness. It's a place where we are overwhelmed. Will we lose ourselves? Will we pause long enough to ask some very deep questions of ourselves? We stop the busy life and we say, what is the meaning of my life? Who can I trust? Who believes in me? Who will lift me up and carry me in my moment of crisis? Who can I trust? Who can I depend on? What community will embrace me in my darkness? Who will walk with me in my crisis? What family? What church? Where will I go to find that in the emptiness, the uncertainty, and the darkness of my life, that I am cherished, I am loved, and I am called into new life? Where is this place? Jerusalem, my destiny. We thought about that on the pilgrimage as we walked through the land of Jesus and followed the journey of the Lord. And if we are to follow the Lord, we will have to go through our own personal experience of Gethsemane. We will go through our experience of darkness. We'll question ourselves. We'll find other people will question us. We'll wonder about our self-value. Where is my place in life? Where is my destiny? Where is my hope? Where are my dreams? Where are my expectations of myself in my life? These are deep questions, frequently overlooked because we compensate by becoming busy, by distracted by many things, and only when we enter into a Gethsemane do we begin to ask ourselves these deep questions about our own lives, to face the failure, face the limitations in my life, face my emptiness, and hear the voice of Jesus saying, I call you to a new life, to a new place, a new understanding of your personal value, a new place where you are loved infinitely in the presence of God. Not only does Jesus call Lazarus forth from the tomb, as we are called, but he tells the community, unbind him and set him free. Family, whoever you are, unbind the person, allow the person to be himself or herself. Allow the person to be human, to make mistakes. Love the person in poverty, not in success. Unbind the person of judgment. Unbind the person of exclusion. Unbind the person from any kind of burdens that limit or diminish the other person. Set the person free. In your family, allow the person to be who the person is. Not who I want the person to be, not my expectations fulfilled, not my ideals realized, but just the humanity of the person. The church. Unbind the church, speaking to the church, unbind the person, set the person free. Allow the person to be human. Allow the person to belong in brokenness, not in perfection. Allow the person to come to the table of the Lord in a search for meaning in all of the humanity the person has. Allow the person to be who she is or who he is. An extraordinary sense of freedom in the presence of God. Buckminster Fuller, familiar name to many of us, he was the one who got the patent on the geodesic dome and became a very famous architect engineer in the history of engineering in our country. When he was a young man, he was very depressed. His little daughter died. He took some responsibility for that, and he was in great, great darkness. And he talks about this himself in his biography, where he thought about ending his life, seriously thinking about suicide. But then he got a revelation, he calls it an epiphany, where he thought, what had happened if I died and I came back to life? How would I live my new life? What would I do differently? How would I see myself if I had died and then God calls me back to new life? How would I live my life? If I heard the voice of Jesus calling me from a place where I am depreciated, where I am confused and struggling in life, and I said, I will give you new life. Roll back the stone, the impediment in your life, whatever it is, your discouragement, whatever, and I call you to new life. What will you do with your new life? That's the teaching of this gospel. And the new life doesn't have to be perfect. Rather interesting book written by this Buddhist nun, Pema Chodron, called Comfortable with Uncertainty. Can we be comfortable with uncertainty? Can we really believe that the love of God is so immense and the call of Jesus is so powerful to call us into new life that we can be comfortable with uncertainty? Even in the church, I have to be comfortable with uncertainty in the church because there are many things of which I am uncertain. I mean, people think that the priest has all the answers. I have more questions than I have answers. I am, like everybody else, searching for a deeper understanding of my life and a deeper and more profound experience of God's infinite love. I constantly want to hear the voice of Jesus calling me to say, come forth, be free, and let the church unbind you and set you free. Why, this is what we want at Holy Family. We want people to be welcome, to be who they are. A church that will say, doesn't matter your color, your lifestyle, you're documented, you're undocumented, you're married, you're unmarried, whatever you are, this church, we pray, will unbind you and set you free to hear the voice of Jesus calling you to new life. Amen.